Good problem.
Hare he om sahana vavatu sahana bhunaktu saha viryam karavavahai tejasvi navadhitamastu Shavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Bottom of the note. This knowledge that the energy of the Lord is simultaneously one with and different from the Lord is an answer to the material speculators' attempt to establish the energy as the absolute. Because energy is what they can see. So they're always trying to establish that the energy is the absolute. That's the difficulty. Is that since that's all that's visible, that's all that they deal with. But what they don't understand is the only reason they deal with that form that's visible, where they can perceive with their senses, is because the absolute is the actual function of the principle. He is the vastu of it. So when, if you see that they're simultaneously one and different, then everything starts to work. Then you can deal with both at once. But it takes some refinement. That's the difficulty. When this knowledge is factually understood, one sees the conceptions of monism and dualism as imperfect. Because if it's only one, that's a problem. Or if it's only two, that's a problem. Because they are one, they're non-different, but at the same time they are different. So that's the difficulty, is that one or the other, they have weaknesses. So the absolute truth is perfectly described by Achintaveda Veda Tattva. That this is the reason it's said that all other philosophies and processes then will naturally flow into Achintaveda Veda Tattva, because it contains everything. Right? Because everything in the world is either established as one or as two. Right? So therefore it's one and two, it includes both.
Right? What does monism mean? The word
monism just means oneness. The concept of oneness. So, but the point is there is oneness. The Lord and His creation is one. At the same time, there's also difference. So the problem. That's why Prabhupada would say exclusive monism. Mm. That's a problem. Mm. Monism's not a problem, but exclusive monism is. Right? That's the difficulty.
So if he accepts the Achintaveda Veda philosophy, means he's only one school who accepts that.
Yes, basically.
So the other one means they are not complete?
They're complete, but they're not as complete. Just like Brahman is complete, is the absolute truth. But then the localized understanding is more full. but the most full is the Bhagavan. But the point is it's not that there's only Bhagavan and there's not Paramatma and Brahman. No, they're all three there. It's just that what's the, you know, it's like you have perfect, more perfect, most perfect. So Dwarka is perfect, right? So that means Vaikuntha is perfect. So on the Vaikuntha level, then the philosophy will work. If you have, special oneness or qualified oneness, or there's two, or it's one and it's two. Those will all work like that. But for Vrindavan, then you have to at least be able to see one and two. But the point is Braj, you have to be able to see the two of them simultaneously. So it's just a matter of how far within Vaikuntha it goes. But the exclusive monism, that's always going to be a problem, because that puts you outside the spiritual planets. So there's no relationship or rasa there. You know. So that's going to be a difficulty. You know, because even the devotees are dealing with Brahman, they're dealing with Parabrahman. You know, so you're still, it's the energy, but you still see the difference between the Lord and, you know, the Lord as the quality and his energy as the forms and activities. Right? So it's still the Brahman platform because it's generic. Right? It may be specific to that situation, but it's still generic. It's not personal. Right? Because you're just dealing with the mechanics of the material energy. Is that? Development of this transcendental consciousness, grounded in the conception of simultaneously one and different, leads one immediately to the stage of freedom from the threefold miseries. Right? Because the threefold miseries are there. The threefold miseries are what manage the material universe, or the external manifestation. So if these things are used properly, there's no problem. The difficulty comes is when they're not used properly. You know what I'm saying? If you have a knife, use it properly, there are no problems. You don't use a knife properly, there are problems. Right? Does that make sense? So if the material energy is used, not seeing it in connection with the Lord, it will always give problems. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if you see it that it's just the same as the Lord and transcendentalism, then there'll be problems. You have to be able to see that it's the Lord's, but it's different. Then the material world doesn't give any problems. Right? It means all of these sciences are all meant like this. Right? Does that make sense? Like we're discussing, it means you have the Lord, and you have he is there. He's surrounded by his potencies. Does that make sense? So in Leela, this is called Yoga Peet. Right, the place where the Lord is situated with his energies. Right, and that formal manifestation. Right, if we're not talking about the formalness, then that's pastimes. Does that make sense? When it's formal, that's Yogpeet. Mm. Right? Mm. So that means, and all of his energies are serving the Lord. Now all these energies are manifesting particular forms and activities that bring out different qualities of the Lord. In other words, the Lord has unlimited qualities. Mm. Right? So that means, for pastimes, means all those unlimited qualities would be manifest. Right, how are they going to manifest unless there's a form and activity that manifests that? Does that make sense? Mm. Right, because the qualities are always there, always existing, but you're only able to appreciate them when they manifest. Right, you know, just like they say, Krishna is great, but how do you appreciate his greatness unless his energies manifest the forms and the activities that show the greatness? Right, like he's holding up Govardhan Hill. Right. So that's a manifestation of his greatness. Right? So the forms and the activities are through his energy. Right? The arrangements of Yoga Maya. Does that make sense? So for all those things to be manifest, then it means all the different devotees then are the various forms and activities that manifest different qualities or different aspects of qualities. Does that make sense? Right? Otherwise, what's the meaning of the different personalities? If everyone's exactly the same, then you always do exactly the same thing. Does that make sense? So the idea is that all this is changing, all this is that because there's all the variety of energy. Right? So all those energies are simply engaged in the Lord's service. Right? So they have a natural relationship, where they're situated, how they relate to each other. Does that make sense? But the point is that it is to be engaged in the Lord's service. Right? That's the perfection. Now, if you also have the ideal arrangement according to the Yogpeet, then that makes it more nice. But if it's not, as long as you get the purpose of serving the Lord, then all the nice qualities manifest. Does this make sense? That's how this science works. So that right there is your astrology. You know, astronomy, astrology, your vastu, those kind of things, your ritual, because the ritual is what you place where, what goes with what. You understand? So they're all about this. So the point is if that aspect is being engaged in the Lord's service, you get the benefit. Right? It doesn't bother. You don't, then it's a problem. Because the point is you're supposed to be serving the Lord. So either you're serving the Lord in devotion as a person, or at least you're respecting Him by following His rules. So that means you have to deal with His energies according to how He likes it. Right? Because it's supposed to be you're dealing with His energies, that you're assisting them in service to the Lord, in devotion. But if not, at least you're not disturbing their service. Does that make sense? So that's why the devotee doesn't need to worry about these things. If he's fully engaged in the Lord's service, it works nicely. You understand? But just as when you're rendering service, if you have a understanding or an opportunity to offer, you know, that there's varieties of paraphernalia or arrangements that can be offered, you're always going to take the better arrangement. Isn't it? Like that. That's then how the devotees engage the astrology and the vastu and all these different things in the Lord, varnashram in the Lord's service. Because they just create a better arrangement. But the point is better arrangement or less better arrangement, if it's without devotion, it doesn't actually please the Lord. Right? So then it's just a matter of, if you're not trying to please the Lord, you're trying to please yourself. Therefore, if you're going to try to please yourself, then you better be pleasing those who have the facility. Right? You know, you want something yourself. Let's say you want to do some work on your house. Then you're doing it for yourself. So you have to please the government. By following the rules, giving the plans, you know, giving your you know, all the papers and fees and this and that. When they're pleased, then you can do your work. So that's why Vastu is so strong, or astrology is so strong, when you're dealing with the mundane. The less you're dealing with the mundane, the less strong it is. You know what I'm saying?
Strong means pointing to authority.
Strong meaning that the reactions are there. You know, it's just like, let's say you have some kind of big personality, right? And he has assistants. And those assistants are there because they get paid well. Right? Does that make sense? And so their duty is to make arrangements for him. Right, so they may, the valet may bring his clothes or shoes or make all these different things like that. Does that make sense? So how well he brings it is how well you'll be pleased, is how well he'll be taken care of. Right, he's well trained, He knows what shoes go with what. The shoes are polished. You know, the laces are right. He's got the right suit, the right cufflinks, the right tie. He knows how to put it on in the right way. Everything goes right. Then you're very pleased. He gets paid well. He doesn't do it so good. He doesn't get paid very well. Okay? But let's say they're just in the house, they're going to go out for some program, and he's trying to, you know, get ready like that. But his son is helping, right? But he's young. So if he brings out some funny shoes, what happens?
Laugh.
You laugh. You understand? There's no reaction. But if the valet brought out the wrong shoes, it's kind of like, why are we paying you? You understand? That's how all of the material knowledge works. You use it for Krishna, it works very nicely. Right? You'll be helped. You know, where you lack, Krishna will fill in. But if it's for you, you got to do it. If it's your money, then you got to deal with it properly. If it's Krishna's money, then Krishna will help. You understand? You know, does that make sense? The management's for yourself, you better be a good manager. If not, you do your best, Krishna will fill in. Does this make sense? Right. So, the whole point is the three modes of nature are only how the mechanics of the material world work. They become a problem for us because we're seeing them separate from Krishna. Otherwise, you have the present, the future, and the past. You have the creation, the maintenance, and destruction. But if it's all for Krishna, what does it matter? You know what I'm saying? It means the car is there. You maintain it with the mode of goodness. But what's it doing? By the mode of ignorance, it's trying to fall apart on you. Right? But you're using the mode of goodness to maintain it. But it's not a problem for you because it's just service to Krishna. But if it's just for you, then it's always a problem. Does that make sense? So there's the thing is this simultaneously one indifference answers all the problems. It's like Varnasha. We use it because it's an excellent system. But it's not that the system is what's important. It's just, it's Krishna's system. So what's important is trying to please Krishna. So the natural way is to please Krishna with his own system. You know, but if you don't know about the system, as long as you're trying to please him, it doesn't matter. It's like children don't know all the social etiquette, but adults are very happy with them. Why? Because of the proper emotional content. But if the kid has attitude and thinks he's the best, then he's just a punk kid. You know what I'm saying? You know, if he does nicely, he's a, you know, a nice young man, right? And if he doesn't, if he's got attitude, he's a punk teenager. Right? So that's the whole thing, is that this is the fact how things are. You deal properly, then it works nicely. You know more about it, great. Add that to the thing. But to think that by this, it makes it work. Only if you have, then Krishna consciousness will work, or only if the Vasu then will work, or only if the astrology, then Krishna consciousness. No, never. It's that Krishna consciousness is the whole reason for the whole, how you say, cosmic manifestation. That's the only reason it's there, is to express devotion. So all mechanics are simply for that. So this oneness and difference is able to tell the difference that there's oneness between the living entity and the Lord. That's why there's interaction. But there's difference. If there's not difference, how do you interact? Right? How do you shake your own hand? You know? It's hard. Right? Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, so it's problem. You know, you smack yourself in the face, but you know, to shake your own hand is hard. Does that make sense? So we're trying to understand this point. So that's why there's oneness, that's why it's together, but there's difference, that's how there's interaction. So all the different things, The reason that they're different is so that they can be used in the service of the Lord. So the one that says all sciences are Krishna. He is Vastu. Right? That's what we're talking about here. But Vastu here meaning the substance. Then there's details of all these different things, depending where you're applying this Vastu. You know, to architecture, to medicine, or to music, or to grammar, or like this. Then you have different rules. But it's just how Krishna likes it. So that's where the difference comes in. But the common is, doesn't matter what it is, you're using it for Krishna. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like the Digvijay pundits. They're using grammar and logic, right, and philosophy for their own purpose. But that's not what they're meant for. They're meant to be used to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. So this simultaneous one and different frees one from all this. Because if someone's saying, no, this the Vastu is more important, the astrology is more, that means what are we dealing with here? Technically, according to this verse, is there freedom from the three modes of nature?
No.
Therefore, one will suffer the miseries. And because the misery comes out, oh, if we do this, or get this ring, or we adjust that, or do this puja, then that'll make it go away. Is that what's going to make it go away? No, it's only if it's engaged in the Lord's service will it go away. End point, because it's the Lord's service, therefore the obstacles that come up, you don't see it as a problem. It's part of service. Does that make sense? Yes?
And Maharaj, then you don't go to mental example when these things happen. You just do it as a service.
Yes, it's just service. So it's not a problem. Because the point is effort means you're trying to transform the situation into something else. Won't that take effort? Right? And in the process, there's always going to be something that's not there. Because if every time it's perfect, it'll get boring. Yeah. You know? Like we're telling you that story from the Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. Hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, hell.
Yeah, means that the man, he doesn't know he got killed. You know, and there's this very beautiful lady comes to him and, you know, just takes him, because he's, you know, he's a criminal. So then therefore, you know, they take him down to the bar and anything he wants, he gets. So he's really ecstatic, you know, playing the game, you know, whatever it is, the gambling, he always wins, you know, whatever drink he wants, he gets, whatever girl he wants, he gets. Everything just goes on for a few weeks. He's in ecstasy. But after a while, he knows that whatever he wants, he'll get. It's just that easy. And then how you say, by this time he's figured out that he's, you know, he's been killed, right? You know, so then he turns to that original lady, who's kind of like the guide, and says, who would have ever known that heaven would have been so boring and so annoying, you know, because you got to do this forever. You know, 2 weeks is ecstasy and then the rest of, you know, eternity, it's boring. And then the lady with a little wry smile looked at him and said, who said this was heaven? You understand? So the thing is what makes it interesting are the obstacles. Isn't it? That's the whole point. Anything you think about, it's the obstacles that we hear about. You know what I'm saying? Even you have some, let's say they're big athletes or something like that, and so then they, you know, they ran and they won, they got the gold medal, but, you know, but now they talk about, yeah, so then, you know, they were great and they, you know, when they were born, you know, they you know, ran out of the hospital and, you know, it's been, you know, something ever since. And, you know, okay, cool, yeah. But, you know, so no, he was in a poor village and his school was 20 miles away and he had to, you know, had duties at the home and he had to run every day. So running every day 20 miles for 20 years, he became pretty good at it. You know, so that's why he's won the gold medal. You know, you understand? It's always like that. Or they went through this, and they had that, and they wanted to study this, but they couldn't because of that, and so many things, and then finally it breaks through, and yeah. And so that's the, you understand? People like that kind of story. Why? Because obstacles are there, obstacles are overcome. So that means there's that interest, there's that determination, all these nice set of qualities. If it just happens, it's just like that, it's like no big deal. You know what I'm saying? If you hear about the rich man who was not born rich, or his son who's born rich, which story is more interesting? Yeah. You know, he was there, he was born like that, and at 12 years old, and, you know, the father died, and he had the whole family, so he had to go out and work and do this and that, and he built his whole empire. You know, and his son's born rich, and his first car was a limousine, and he went to the best school, and, you know, he got top marks, and he's a valedictorian, and he gave the lecture, and, you know, he went to, you know, Oxford or Harvard, and, you know, he got good grades, and, you know, he's a PhD now, and he runs the company. Who cares? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, but the father went through and, you know, had his, you know, as a thing, you know, they were living in a shoebox, you know, all that. They went to, I think they had to get up before they went to bed. You know, the whole thing, you know, that you wanted that story you want to hear about, right?
Slapping the face for breakfast.
Yeah. But the other guy, it's, you know, had a handful of rocks for breakfast. You know, that's what they got. So. Does that make sense? So that's what you want to hear about those things. Everything just goes perfectly. Who wants to hear? That's the whole point. Now, have you ever seen an editorial is going on how something's so good and nice? No, it has to be on how it's something's wrong. Right? It's, you know, if it's good and nice, it'll just say, oh, hey, he's just, you know, a supporter, he's just propaganda. But if he says it's bad, then they'll say, oh, he's an intellectual, he's so well thought out. But if you do exactly the same thing showing the positive, oh, he's not intelligent, he's just a yes man, he's just a this, he's a, yeah, like that. So we can see here. So the point is obstacles aren't the problem. So the three modes of nature acting, what mechanics and situations they create, is not the problem. It's what your experience is from it. If the experience is difficult, I mean, the situation is difficult, but the experience is good, you don't call it bad. But if this situation is very nice, but you don't have a good experience, you don't call it bad, good. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's all on that perception. So that perception is what is connected to the devotion. That's what we're trying to see, is that, so it's not that religion means there'll be no problems. No, religion means you won't have any difficulty dealing with the problems. Like that. Does that make sense? So that means it'll only actually be real religion when you're dealing with those problems for Krishna. Then it's Sanatan Dharma. Right? So that's the point, is the Vastava Vastu, is when the Vastu, the substance, the substance is actually understood, the real substance of the substance is Krishna. Right? So Vastu is not enough, that's substance, but the substance of the substance is Krishna. Otherwise, you just see the form, right? If I say, okay, what's in the south? Oh, okay, so Yamaraj is in the south, and this and that, but that's only the Vastu. What is the Vastava Vastu? Means in the Brahma sthan, in the middle of that, that's where Krishna is with Lakshmi. So to his right, that's where Yamaraj is. Or that potency of Dharma. You understand? So therefore you follow the nature of your particular form for Krishna, that will please Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that when Vastu is dealt with without the Vastava aspect, that's where it falls apart. And if we only say, oh, there's only Vastava, no Vastu, how is there manifestation? Mm-hmm. Oh, we only care for Krishna. Yeah, mm-hmm. But Krishna is everything, so therefore, you understand? Mm-hmm. We're saying it's all one, but we can't see the difference. At the same time, there is a difference. Because, no, we only care about Krishna. We don't care about all this other stuff. What is that other stuff? It's Krishna. So now that's dualism, but it's not actual real dualism. And we only care about Krishna. It appears to be, but it's a monism because it's Krishna without his energies. You understand? So that's the problem. It's a statement based on improper philosophical understanding that you think monism stands on its own, or duality stands on its own, or dualism stands on its own. Yes.
So we say it's also deism because we see the world as functioning.
Yeah. You could. I mean, that comes up as when you make it into a philosophy like that.
Yeah.
Here it's just you don't know. You haven't really come to that. So when you become aware of it and emphasize it, then it takes on all these things. That's what we'll get into here, and we'll slowly get into all the philosophies. And that is that people take it and emphasize it. That's why it becomes an ism. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I was just discussing with Preeti Vardhan yesterday, where Prabhupada's talking about when you have sense gratification, right, anamoy. When that's extended to others, that's pranamoy. Then you can have isms. So without pranamoy, you can't have isms. Right? So then it's a natural further step, but it's not quite religion. Right? But if it's more on the religious side, means you've taken the religion, but you've made it into that the religion or the vastu is more important than the vastava. So therefore you have the smarta. He follows the religion, but is Brahmanism. Right? But, or it's on the pranamoy, where it's a little bit more elevated of that, is that, you have socialism, or you have, humanitarianism, or, some kind of ism, where it's, philosophizing your need to extend the sense gratification to others. So everybody can have. You understand?
Yeah.
So that's upadharma. It's not actually dharma. It's upadharma. Right? Does that make sense? So it's not exactly just economics, justice, and morality or ethics. It's something a little bit more, but it's not actually dharma. But it appears to be. So it's upadharma. It's kind of like in between, because each thing has its, each means, in other words, you have your sense gratification, your anamoy, which is the senses. You have jnanamoy, which is the emotions, or manamoy, which is the emotional platform of rasa. And then anandamoy, which is the transcendental platform of rasa, right? In between, where it's the emotional and the sensual, you have pranamoy. And in between the transcendental and the religious, you have the liberation. That aspect of the of spiritual, the Brahman platform, right? So naturally, you're going to have between anamoy and pranamoy that little bit, or between each one, there'll be connections.
Yeah.
It just keeps going and going and going like that. Is this all kind of clear here? Because we have to understand the philosophical aspect of this vastava vastu, then we can see it applied everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, then we'll apply it in one place, and then we get into one of the 13 subjects, of the Vedic literatures that are not philosophy, then we'll get distracted. And even within philosophy, if you overbalance something, we get distracted. Right? Patanjali is overemphasizing the localized aspect. Does that make sense? The others are overemphasizing the Brahman aspect. Does that make sense? The Sahajas overemphasize the personal aspect. So he's just a person and doing what he likes to do. But the point is the creation is also part of what he does. And there's rules. Does that make sense? So when, like that, there's the balance is not there, then it becomes one of these things that are affected by the modes. Yeah? Okay. So back to the talk. Ultimately, the Supreme Personality of Godhead alone is that vastava vastu. Truly abiding substance, right? Because being non-different, he is the vastava and he is the vastu. Right? So that's the point, is that they're one thing, but they're two. There's vastava vastu is the Lord being everything, but at the same time there's vastava, the Lord, and vastu, his potencies. Right? So the oneness and difference. The jiva is a fractional part of that vastava vastu, and maya, the external potency that produces illusion, is his energy. Therefore, vastu indicates Supreme Lord, the jiva, and maya, all three principles together. But if you only see one of them, You only see, okay, here, and then the money is here, and if you do this and make an adjustment there, then you get more. If you don't, then you lose your money. That's only seeing the external energy. So you're not seeing all three together. So it's not actually Vastu. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, or you know, the Ayurveda is only seen in connection with, it's not seen in connection with Krishna consciousness, or the astrology, or the grammar, or like that. Anything that's taken and just seen on its own, it's not actually substance. That's why we say then it's illusion. Right? Yes.
What would be an example? What would be an example of connecting Vastu with the Lord, so it's not illusion? Like, how would that?
Didn't we just spend 15 minutes doing that? No, I'm saying you didn't catch any of that.
Yeah, but I was just wondering about the. I mean, the building and the arrangements there is for the Lord.
Right.
So you're using the actual. You're using.
The science for the Lord, but the point is that it has to be the devotional aspect. Why would we want the window in the south in the proper place?
Maybe to light up the deity room or something like
that. Yeah, but it's just that's where Krishna likes it.
Okay.
You know, maybe we don't know exactly why he likes it there, but that's where he likes it. You know what I'm saying?
So that's using the science?
Yeah, but otherwise, we're worried about it because if it's there, then all the energy goes out or all the money will be lost. Mm. So that's why we're worried about it. Mm. But the only reason that it'll be lost is because that's not where that energy applies itself. But the point is they can move around. You know what I'm saying? In the Yogpeet, okay, Lalita's in the north, but it's not that she can't stand on the south side. That's just the natural relationship. You know what I'm saying? That's where the things expand. What is the hierarchy of the energies? And their relationship. But it doesn't mean they can't move around. So even if you're performing your duties according to your nature and doing that fully for Krishna, that means you're performing your dharma correctly. So that means all the problems in the south are taken care of. You know what I'm saying? Even if the window's in another place, still, you know, Dharma knows who it is and what it does. You understand? But if you're not doing that, then you're getting the material reaction. So that's the whole point. If you're always absorbed, then you don't have to worry about it. If you're sometimes absorbed, sometimes not, then you should sometimes worry about it. Right? If you're never absorbed, then you should always worry about it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Does that make sense? Okay. Therefore, Vastu... Okay. Proper comprehension of the relationship amongst these principles is Shuddha Jnana, true knowledge. So that's true knowledge. So that has substance, right? So knowledge has real substance when it's seen in relationship to the Lord, right? So that's Sambandha Jnana, the Jiva, the Lord, and the material energy. You see who they are, what's their relationship. That's real knowledge. If you don't see that, it's not actually real knowledge. That's why we'll say the modern academia is illusion. It's ignorance. Because even though it may have facts, it's talking about the material world. Where's the jiva and where's God in that calculation? So even though they may have one-third correct, by not addressing the other two-thirds, it therefore becomes useless. You know? Just like the scholar on the boat. You know, he doesn't know swimming, so therefore all his knowledge is useless. Right? Is that? Sannyasi Thakur continued, Prabhu, I would like to have a better grasp of this subject. Right? So in other words, he's given the essence. Because generally when you present a subject, you give it in its essential form, then you expand it, and then you give all the examples and everything. Right? So it has naturally those three stages. Right? That's the natural presentation. You have the what do you call it? The thesis, then you have explanation or reasons, and then you have the full explanation with example. Right? So that's just natural. So now he's given that, now understanding that, now he wants to hear more. Babaji Maharaj answered, in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which contains the deliberations of Sri Chaitanya, upon this subject it is said, the Nitya Dharma of the Jiva is to be an eternal servant of Krishna, because he is the Tathastha Shakti, marginal energy of Krishna, and thus a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. Madhya Lila 20.108. Forgetting Krishna, the Jiva has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. Therefore, Maya, the illusory energy, gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence. Right? Because energy seen separate from Krishna, since the purpose of energy is to please Krishna, then naturally you'll get misery. For improperly using something, even though technically you're using it correctly. Just like, let's say, the teenagers, they go out and sneak out and take the dad's car, right? They're not supposed to take the dad's car, right? But they're driving it very properly, right? They're using the rearview mirror. They got their seat belts on. They stop at all the stoplights. They don't go past the speed limit. They do everything by the rules properly. But are they going to have a good time ultimately? No. At some point, the good time's going to run out. Right? Because they're not using for what it's supposed to be used for. So even you follow all the rules of the pious rules given in the Vedas, you know, all the morality, all the Dharma, everything, if it's not used in connection to Krishna, it will give you trouble. Does that make sense? It will. Because your moksha is under goodness. Your Dharma is under, you know, goodness and passion. Your art is under passion and ignorance, and the sense gratification is under ignorance. So where is it there that we're not going to get trouble? But if it's used for Krishna, then the mode of ignorance then takes on the quality means of the sundani potency or existence, right? Eternality. Right, the mode of passion takes on the qualities of the samvit or knowledge, right? Your chit, and your goodness takes on the qualities of ladini, right? Or ananda. Does that make sense? Because that's what it's reflected from. So you use it for Krishna, then you're working with samvit, sandini, ladini. That's how the mechanics work there. But if you don't, those reflect as goodness, passion, ignorance. So then though the mechanics works nicely, but because it's not used for Krishna, you get disturbed. You do it the other way, you become happy. Why? Because Krishna is happy, therefore you're happy. The other one, Krishna is not happy. Okay, you've dealt with it nicely, so then that's there. For that part, you won't get any problem. You know what I'm saying? So when the kids bring the car back, you know, and the father's standing there in the driveway, you know, it's kind of like, oops. Then, you know, he comes back, you know, there's no tickets, the police haven't called, there's no nicks on the car and everything, and he sees them driving in, they got the seat belts on, you know, he used the turn indicator, so he can tell they've been driving properly. He's not going to yell at them about their driving, he's going to be like, why did they take it without asking? But if it comes back and there's a dent in the fender and this and that and somebody's hanging out the window and, you know, and this and, you know, all kinds of stupid stuff like that, then you're going to get it for that also. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? That's just how things work. Does that make sense? That's just the facts, but we have our own idea. No, it shouldn't work like, because it's for the teenagers, no, it shouldn't work like that. You know, it should be just, you know, we felt like having some fun and we took the car and we brought it back and hey, what's the problem? You know, does that make sense? You know, okay, you know, so you know, Mikey, you know, how you say, barfed on the the back seat. Well, not this Mikey. Like that, you know, and you know, and the other guys left all their, you know, their tins around in the back of the car. You know, okay, stuff like that. But hey, that's not a big deal. That takes 2 minutes to clean up like that. And, you know, of course, you're not going to clean it up, you know. So, like that. That's why they make, you know, those places where you clean cars, right? You know, like that, you know.
Or moms.
Huh?
Or moms.
Yeah, like that. But, you know, and, you know, and, yeah, mom provides the $25 to do that, clean it, and stuff like that, you know, so. But it doesn't work like that. It's just there's laws, there's rules, there's a purpose to things. You know, the purpose is not just for us to enjoy. The purpose is we can enjoy, but we enjoy it with the Lord. So that's the point. If the Lord's involved, he doesn't have a problem that you're enjoying also. Right? Let's say you're having a party, right? And it's your party. Do you have a problem that other people are enjoying? They like the food, you know, they like the music, right? They like the dance, they like sitting on the couch, you know, this is not good. You understand? But the point is if they're going on the party and come totally ignoring you, that's a problem. Does that make sense? Yeah, so this is the point is that Krishna doesn't have problem that the living entity enjoys. We have the idea, no, devotional means no enjoyment. No, means enjoyment means it's Krishna, you're trying to please Krishna. So you're happy in doing that. That's fine. That's natural. Right? You know, if the host is happy, he's encouraging them to enjoy and everything. Does that make sense? So that's the natural thing, is that it's doing things together because the Lord and the living entity are non-different. Therefore, why would there be an endeavor by one without the other being happy? Krishna does everything to make the living entities happy, so naturally the living entities would do everything to make Krishna happy. It's just that's the way relationship works. You know, you're a friend, you're trying to do things to make your friend happy, he naturally tries to do things to make you happy. That's what friendship is. If you're always trying to make him happy and he couldn't care less about you, it's not called friendship. Right? It's called high school, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the way it doesn't work like that. Yes.
In regards to
this is not about the back seat. So. No. Okay.
In regards to modern religion, when someone is following the rules of connecting to the Brahman or the Paramatma. Because Krishna is Paramatma and Brahman.
Right.
Is he still pleased?
Yes, but it's only partially pleased. Yeah. In other words, once you come to the Brahman platform, then you're dealing with reality. So that's what's also special about this sannyasi, is that he's functioning on that Brahman platform. So now we can, in 40 chapters, go through the full philosophy and everything very quickly. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to go through the process of 1,000 lifetimes or something like that, you know. So it can go through very, very nicely because you're starting at that platform. But he's already pointed out that that is not enough because he's been on that Brahman platform, but from the mundane point of view, right? So now it's being transferred to the spiritual and then we'll see he'll move forward, right? He'll move forward. Does that make sense? So it's when you come to the Bhagavan platform and it's favorable, right, to please Krishna, right, then that becomes more serious. And when it's done without any, you know, idea for karma or gyan, if it's not mixed with that, then that's pure devotional service. So that's what makes Krishna fully happy. Because otherwise, if you want something else, how do you, in other words, You want to make money, but you want to give some to the temple, but your main interest is, you know, yourself, but you're giving some to Krishna. So that means the part is connected with Krishna, then he can reciprocate. It's a relationship. But the part that's for yourself, it's not with him. So how will he be fully happy? That's why we're not fully happy with mixed devotional service. Does that make sense? Because the point is that, okay, only a certain amount can be given to the temple and the rest you need for taking care of the, you know, family or whatever. But the point is the family or whatever is also Krishna. So are you seeing that part of it in relationship to him? So that's more your Brahman and Paramatma aspect. You're given to the temple because of the Bhagavan aspect. But in other words, you're not seeing the complete picture. Does that make sense? So because of that, then there's a problem. So it's where we're not including Krishna, that's where the problem is. And when we don't include Krishna, that's when we're dealing with the modes of nature. And the modes of nature are designed to make us not happy. Why? Because everything is temporary. Like that. So it can't make the jiva happy. And because it's temporary, how much can it develop? How full can it be? Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Forgetting Krishna, the jiva has been attracted by the external feature from time immemorial. In other words, it's attracted to the vastu and not to the vastava. Therefore, maya, the vastu, gives him all kinds of misery in his material existence, because the vastu is only meant to please vastava. That's what it's there for. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So that's the point. Sri Krishna is the infinite spiritual substance. Well, the jiva is his infinitesimal part and parcel, and therefore also a spiritual substance. So both spiritual, but he's unlimited and he's small. Sri Krishna and the jiva are qualitatively the same, being the same spiritual nature. That's the oneness, but the quantitative makes a difference. However, the Supreme Lord is Brihad Chat Vastu, the complete infinite spiritual energy, whereas the jiva is Anu Chit Vastu, the infinitesimal spiritual entity. Right? It doesn't say he's Brihad Chit and he's Lagu Chit. No, Anu Chit. You know, Lagu, you know, Brihad means the full, Lagu means like a summary, but Anu just means small. The Lord, although they are one in the quality of their spiritual nature and consciousness, this contrast of quantity between the Lord and the jiva is a permanent feature of their natures. Right, so quality of the spiritual nature and consciousness. So that means the level of consciousness, the quality of it can be the same. The volume of it, never. But the what we are conscious of can be on the same platform of Krishna's consciousness of it.
Yeah.
So that's why there's relationship. Right? So if we're conscious of something else other than Krishna, then that's not, because there is nothing other than Krishna. Mm. Right? So then the consciousness doesn't match. So that's why we're always worried about consciousness. Because if we're conscious of Krishna, he's conscious of us. Right? He's always conscious of us, the natural reciprocation, we're conscious of him. Does that make sense? You know, and we're always conscious of him. It's just whether we understand we're conscious of him or not. And what level of consciousness of him. Like, the materialist is always conscious of God in the form of his external energy. So is Brahman. But they're not conscious that that is the Supreme Lord. So one, it's the lesser of the three forms of the Lord, and they're not even conscious that it's the Lord. So how good is it going to be? Right? The consciousness will be less.
So we have to be conscious that we're conscious.
Yes, you should be conscious that you're conscious. Does that mean you have to be conscious and you're conscious or you're conscious?
I'm just thinking.
But are you conscious of your thinking of being conscious of being conscious of being conscious? Yes.
Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that he pervades the entire creation with a spark of his splendor.
Yes.
And then we know that Krishna, he can do anything with any one of his limbs. He can
right.
do this again. So does that mean, is that how we can explain how he can empower a jiva, a spiritual spark, he can put the full potency so it can be Shakti of Ishavatar?
Yeah, but it means it's not full potency, it's a partial potency, but the point is it's way more than what we got. You know? So therefore, you know. Because Krishna is beyond superhuman. Right, so they're just partial. And it's generally just one quality. You know, like Prithu Maharaj is administration. You know, like that. So it's one quality. But it's manifest in a greater percentage than anybody else has. Like that.
Is Srila Prabhupada a Shakti of Ishavatar?
Yeah, it means how he can preach, how he can present. Because his system, even if you don't understand it, works. Well, others have tried to put together the system and they can't make it work, even they're fully conscious of it. You know what I'm saying? A new bhakta can take Prabhupada's system and go out and spread Krishna consciousness. That's called Shaktivet. You know, in other words, to work out that system, that's what's... And that's because Krishna is so pleased with that you're doing what he... as the device. So, because he knows exactly what pleases Krishna, so you're doing it. Mm-hmm. Therefore, Sri Krishna is the jiva's eternal master, and the jiva is Sri Krishna's eternal servant. This is their natural constitutional relationship. You see that, then everything starts to work. Krishna is endowed with unlimited potencies. His complete potency, Purna Shakti, is perceived in the manifestation of the spiritual world, Chit Jagat. Similarly, his Tathasta Shakti, or marginal potency, is observed in the manifestation of the jivas. A special potency acts in assembling the finite world, Apurna Jagat. And this potency is known as Tathasta Shakti. The action of the marginal potency is to create an entity, Vastu, which exists between the animate objects, Chid Vastu, and inanimate objects, Achid Vastu, and which can maintain a relationship with both the spiritual and material worlds. Purely transcendental entities are by nature quite the opposite of inanimate objects, and therefore have no connection whatsoever with them. Although the jiva is an animate spiritual particle, he's capable of a relationship with inanimate matter due to the influence of Aishi Shakti, a divine potency, which is known as the Tathasta Shakti. So here's some fun. Okay? So the internal potency doesn't have any connection with, because it's the opposite of the external. The external is the shadow. It's the opposite. It has the same kind of forms and mechanics, but it's opposite. So there's no connection between the internal potency and the external. Right? The jiva is, though, being a very small portion of that internal potency, but they have the ability, due to their smallness, to be able to come in contact with the external. While the internal never comes in contact. They just don't. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's just like you know, when you meet someone else, you deal with the person. Right? Mm. The kids might get down and start playing with the shadows. Right? Because they're small. They may get distracted by that. The adults don't. Mm. Does that make sense? So it's just, there's no interest. They just don't get involved. So the point is you have to have something that is able to deal with the two, because the jiva is of superior energy, and the material energy is of inferior. So it's this Tathasta Shakti that holds them together. You have the jiva, which is spiritual, and the body, which is external energy. How that's happening? That's the Tathasta Shakti. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. But the Tathasta Shakti is something other than the jiva.
The jiva is yes, you have me, just like you have this rock, and then you have Maya Devi yourself.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because we're a portion of the Lord's potency. So the chit potency, that means this Tathasta Shakti, or this Aishi Shakti, then holds all these things together, makes all this arrangement. So he's marginal potency. Right? But he's an infinitesimal part. But then the whole is there. Just like you have the Surup Shakti, which is the total energy of the Lord. But then you have all the expansions as all the different personalities in the Lord's pastimes. You know? Does that make sense? The jiva is the external potency. So you have then the major categories of the internal, the external, and the marginal. But all those are just three aspects of one energy. Right? Does that make sense? And that one energy is not different from Krishna. It's him, but it is different. And then it has these three parts, and then each part has its subsections. Does that make sense? So therefore, the jivas are an infinitesimal part of this Tathasta Shakti, which is a portion, which is the aspect of the internal potency that's just on the border. Right?
Yeah.
So that part holds it together. You know what I'm saying? It's like your hand deals with the things outside. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Because it's on the edge. Mm. Does that make sense? Mm. Your internal organs just deal with the body. So it's like that. Is that what's on the edge? That's what deals. So the Tathasta Shakti is on the edge of the internal potency. That's why it deals with these two being together. And the living entities who decide to be there, then they're the ones who is being dealt with. Right? Does that make sense?
Why does he write that this marginal potency creates an entity between?
An entity between means what is this body?
External.
Is it the material energy or is it the internal energy?
External.
But the jiva is there, it's moving around, it's giving all the life symptoms. Would the dead matter do that on its own? Does this rock do that?
No.
No, but these elements of the rock are found in the body. You know, so is the air moving around, so is the water, you know. But so therefore that's an entity that is in between. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole thing. You know, the air is there, but there's a demigod that controls it. He's the thing in between. You know, in other words, he's between the big pile of, you know, air that's surrounding the universe and the particular air that happens to be blowing by here. You know what I'm saying? So you always have this in between. Like we were talking before, there's always that in between. Yes,
sir? Now, in the same sentence where it says living entity can maintain a relationship with both the spiritual and the material world, is that two relationships simultaneously, or?
Means you're dealing with the material world, but you're dealing with it in connection to Krishna, so therefore you're dealing with two at once. Because in the spiritual world, you don't have to. It's all, there is no material. But at the same time as you're dealing with the Lord and you're dealing with his parts and parcels. Right? So you're able to accommodate the oneness that everything's all being done for Krishna's pleasure and the difference that there is a difference between the Lord and his devotees and between devotees and different devotees. And you can tell the difference between the devotee, the situation that's there, the experience gained. So you can see all the differences, but you can see all the oneness.
No relationship with the material world.
No.
For the devotee, the material world is a relationship with both. And for the non-devotee, it's only a relationship with the material world.
But, no, he's also relating with the Lord, but he doesn't know it. That's why it's called illusion. Illusion means you're dealing with the Lord, but you don't know it. We generally take illusion to mean you're not dealing with the Lord. But in effect, you're not dealing with the Lord. If you don't see the Lord in that, it's only his energy. Because he is it means the only reason the energy can work is because he is the center of that. The Vastu works because of the Vastu. Right? In other words, does that make sense? The forms of greatness work because of the potency because of the nature of greatness, of great. You know, the greatness itself, then there are forms of greatness that manifest it. But without greatness, what would the meaning of the forms be? Does that make sense? So, you can't separate them. But at the same time is... Where were we in your question?
You explained that the relationship, materialist has a relationship with the material world, but also just not consciously is also related.
Okay, yeah. So the thing is because general we give is that there's a person who's conscious of God, you know, Krishna means the devotee, and then there's the person in illusion. Right? In other words, the devotee is dealing with the Lord and the person in illusion is not. Because the person in illusion, he's not dealing with the Lord because he doesn't think he is. He actually is, but because he doesn't know that, that's called illusion. So the effect is he's not dealing with the Lord, but in actuality, he is. There's no living entity that's not dealing with the Lord in any time, place, or circumstance. Because Krishna being everything, there's no such thing as not dealing with Krishna. But because you want to forget him, therefore, he gives you the thing, he gives you the credit that you have forgotten. You know, because if it's always been put in your face, no, you're always remembering the Lord, but he's not, no, it's kind of like, you know, hey, enough of that. You know, I just want to, you know, think of my, how you say, you know, my, whatever it is, my motorcycle, or whatever it is. Does that make sense? Yes.
Is it why, like Mahabhagavata, is always see everybody engaged in Krishna?
Yeah, that's why he sees everybody engaged, because they are engaged. It's just whether they know it or not. But they're Brahman, everything's Brahman, and they're doing everything according to, you know, under the Lord's you know, potencies. So he sees everyone, and they're all servants of God, so he sees them in their liberated state. So therefore they're servants, and they're assisting, you know. But you're dealing with the Brahman platform, so the Brahman platform is not dealing with devotion. You understand? Because that's Bhagavan. So on the Brahman platform, everybody is on the Uttam platform because they actually are. It's just they think they're separate. Therefore, the effect is like that. You know what I'm saying? We hear, I'm servant of Krishna. That's the fact. So what keeps us from acting in that moment as servant of Krishna? Right? It's our habit that we think we're not servant of Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Just like someone who's been doing something in a particular way for a long time then finds out that's not actually the proper way of doing it. So, but it's going to take a while for them to break that habit. Even though they now know the correct, they still will act according to the previous habit. So it's we still act as if we're a materialist. Right? You know what I'm saying? So the quicker we adjust that, the quicker we move forward. Right? Does that make sense? So advancement in devotional service means, but through practice, we're adjusting our habit. Right? We're adjusting from doing it for ourselves to doing it for Krishna. Right? And so it doesn't matter where you're situated. Right? So that's why for us, Varnashram is just how it works. It's not that, it's that knowledge is a high, you need knowledge to perform activity. And to perform activity, you need money. Right? And having, you know, the knowledge, the activity, and the money, still you have to actually get it done. So therefore, there's the person who does it. You understand? That's just how it works. You know, so that means knowledge has to be established first. So the Brahmins have to be established first. Then there has to be environment in that endeavor. But there has to be the support of money. And there has to be the person that does it. So therefore, that's why we have these things. We falsely may go, the Brahmins are superior and this one, this and that. The Vedas aren't talking. They're just saying that this is, you have to have this to do that. Just like if I said, you can't cook potatoes if you don't have potatoes. Right? And then, you know, I need pots, I need a fire, I need a spoon, I need spices. Oh, so you think the pots are so superior, huh? Like that, you know, it's like, no, you just can't do without that. You have to have all these things. They each do their thing. But you have to know what's first. You know what I'm saying? If I have a kitchen and no potatoes, I can't do anything. But if I have potatoes, there is ways I can cook them. So that's why if you have knowledge, you can establish all the others. But if you have labors and you don't have knowledge, you're not going to get anything done. You know? Even if I have money, still doesn't mean I'll get anything done. Still you have knowledge, then you can start getting things done. So that's why there's a hierarchy. So that's just the mechanical hierarchy. But as far as Krishna is concerned, as devotion goes, it doesn't matter where you are, if you're using that to serve Him, that's perfection, because that's what anything's for. The body, mind, and words of the living entity are meant to serve the Lord. That's what they're doing in the spiritual world. Mother Yashoda takes her, you know, her particular taste in serving Krishna, right? That manifests a particular form and facilities, and she uses that for Krishna. So her body, her mind, her words are engaged in Krishna's service. But it's not that Mother Yashoda is special and, you know, the cowherd boys are a bunch of idiots. You know what I'm saying? They just play all day. You know, Mother Yashoda gets things done. No, it doesn't, no. The point is whatever you're doing, it's for Krishna. Krishna is happy. Because it's all Him anyway. You know what I'm saying? Person comes up, shakes your hand. The other person comes up, pats you on the back. It's not a problem for you, because you know your hand is you and your back is you. You know, your small kid and the oldest come up and pat you on the head. It's not a problem. It's all you. You know what I'm saying? Someone else is giving you a back massage. Someone else is massaging your feet. You know what I'm saying? Someone's playing music for you, you know, so the ears are... It doesn't matter. It's all you. So for Krishna, it doesn't matter what you use in His service. That's the point. Pure devotion is the thing. But in applying this pure devotion, if you're only one person, then that's one thing. But since you have to cooperate together in a group, you have to know the mechanics of that. That's why Varnashram explains who does what. Right? You know, the Brahmin gives advice, but the Kshatriya takes it, does something with it. He gets the credit or gets the blame. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
The Brahmin doesn't get the credit. Not in the social scene. The king gets the credit. But between the king and the Brahmin, then the Brahmin gets the credit. The king gives credit to the Brahmin. But that's private. You know, and they'll also say, like Vikramaditya is there, you know, I think the others. Kings that are known because they have great ministers. You know, the nine jewels, you know, he has nine ministers, they're great. So, but he's a great king because he has them. They're not going, well, he's just a nobody because he has these nine guys, that's why. No, the king gets the credit. The Brahmin doesn't. Yes.
So when the people pay respects to Brahmanas, it's not for anything specific, it's just basically for...
It's the position. It may be that within that position they've done something so that personal, therefore you have that particular aspect.
But that would also then be private between whoever or...
Yeah, but I'm saying still you have your etiquette. So if they're in a public forum and the kings are, the Brahmins are there, the Brahmins are respected and all that. But the point is it's about the king. The reason you're there at the ceremony is because the king is there. The Brahmins were there. Why do you need to have a coronation ceremony? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, it's like that. The Brahmins would sit around and do a yagya, discuss Bhagavatam or something, you know, like that. But because there's a king, there's a coronation. Therefore, they're all there and they do all the things. But who puts the crown on a king's head?
Brahmins.
The Brahmins, right? You know? Like that. It's not that his mother comes up and says, you know, you're kidding.
Good boy.
Like that. Yeah, yeah. You know. It's that the Brahmin puts it on his head. Then people accept, yes, this is the higher authority accept. So, you know, in nature, everyone does these things. But the point is we're getting here, is Krishna doesn't, it doesn't matter to Krishna. We make it into a social thing and stigma of this and that. It's because, you know, as it is today, the reason Varnashram is sometimes in certain circles politically incorrect is because we can't accept the concept, this concept. And because no one wants to be the Shudra. Though basically, at least occupationally, most everybody is. Ashram-wise, no, but occupationally, most devotees are Shudras. They all have a job. How many run businesses, or how many are an educator, or how many are an actual administrator, not just a clerk? You know what I'm saying? So most are Shudras, but that's just because of, you know, the situation that happens to be there and this and that. But as far as ashram goes, everybody's living the Brahminical lifestyle. So as a person, they're accepted as a Brahmin, but occupationally not.
Would it be safe to say that a true Brahman or Kshatriya or Vaishya would not really be worried about Varnashram?
Not worried means?
Yeah, not mental about what Varna they are.
No, because that's the way it is. I mean, I've met real Vaishyas. I mean, they're dynastically Vaishyas. Their bloodline is Vaishya. They don't have a problem that they're a Vaishya and you're a Brahma. It's not a problem at all. We're Vaishyas. This is what we do. We make money, you know, but we give in charity. That's one thing about those Brahmins. They're always those Vaishyas are always charitable. There's no question of not. You know, so you know their bloodlines are pure. It's just like they're real Vaishyas. All the good, all the bad, everything. You know, and they have no problem that's who we are. You know, I mean, a guy who's a farmer, he doesn't have a problem. I'm a farmer. I'm out here. I'm covered from head to toe with cow dung. It's not a problem. I got my boots on. I drive my tractor. He doesn't have a problem. And other guys will run the country, and other guys will educate, and he's a farmer. He doesn't have a problem with that. You know what I'm saying? So those who understand it like that, they don't have a problem. They're the nicest. I remember I've met... You can say a few devotees have said they're Shudras, but this one, he actually he meant it as much as those Vaishyas did. But I can remember we were on, Indradun Maharaj's tour. And this one devotee, he was the driver, Maharaj's driver. That's it. And he was very clear, I'm a Shudra. I drive the car. That's what I do. That's his occupation. The reason he's on the thing is that. But basically, after Maharaj, he was one of the most senior men. You had anything, you wanted, saw anything, you went to him. So as far as the tour went, he was practically, after Maharaj, the most respectable person. He wasn't the most powerful. They had the tour managers, they had the department heads. But as far as the person went, he was the most respected, you know, on the tour, right, after Sri Prahlad. Does that make sense? Because he was, I'm this and that's what I am. So it's not a problem. That's the problem. We take it, if I'm a Shudra, then I'm going to be kicked around like some serf in the Middle Ages, like that. Yes, that's what the Westerners do. But that's not the Vedic culture does. Vidura was a Shudra. You know, the only one that kicked him around was Duryodhana. And that was only, occasionally. That was only when he opposed him because he was right. So, it was more of a technique to get rid of him. But he was the prime minister. He's a Shudra, but he's a prime minister because of his qualification. So it's that the Varnashram system's not understood. Krishna, it's his body, right? The Shudras are the feet. You don't like your feet? Krishna's toes are nice. His toenails are nice. He has a nice arch. His heels are there. They're not fatty and weird. There's no varicose vein. His feet are nice. So does he have a problem with his feet? So does he have a problem if someone's a Shudra? No. But in the same capacity, when you're talking about ashram dharma, brahmacharis are in the feet. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? We definitely don't look at that. So we're not looking at being brahmachari is bad. So then if brahmachari is not bad, why would being a Shudra be bad? Point is, use what you have in Krishna's service. That's what makes it perfect. If you don't use it in Krishna's service, that's illusion. Even if you're a Brahmin, if you don't use it in Krishna's service, that's what a smart is. We're not complaining that the smartas are bad Brahmins. They're excellent Brahmins. Right? The problem is it's not connected to Krishna. That's the problem with the smarta. And the problem with Shudras is the tendency to not connect things to Krishna. You know what I'm saying? That's the problem. But if they connect to Krishna, what do we have? What's our problem with Shudras?
And when they don't connect to Krishna, that's why they start complaining about Varnashram.
Yeah, that's the problem. Unless they're pious, then they accept it. But if they're not pious, they'll immediately complain. You had something?
Well, I don't know what I asked. There was thinking that maybe there was more sense gratification being a Brahmin or something, and then maybe you wouldn't...
More sense gratification being a Brahmin? It means you have all you give direction, but you don't get any benefit for it. It means, look at it. What does an administrator get as payment? What does a Brahmin get? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like that. Who has all the facilities? Now, if you hear that, you know, the mayor is out at a big party and they're having a big bash and that, and as long as he doesn't go off with someone else's wife or something too stupid, does anybody mind? No, but if you hear about the professor, that university, he's at a big party and having a great time, it's kind of like, hey, wait a minute. No. All it is absolutely just social prestige. That he's on the top of the pile, and we have this idea, false idea, who's on the top of the pile tells everyone what to do, and they got to do it. Yeah. No, the Brahmin's on the top of the pile. He recommends what would be correct according to Shastra, but it's up to them whether they do it or not. That's where then we take that position of the Brahmin and the one of the administrator, and then the control of the money and our facility to just, you know, enjoy ourselves. You know, saying, oh, we're a grihastha, he's a grihastha, what does it matter? No, that's a shudra, it doesn't matter. A grihastha lives a brahminical lifestyle, so why would he be off just enjoying himself? That's not for grihasthas, that's what shudras do. Right? And then they suffer from that. Right? They off enjoying themselves, and the next moment, then there's a problem, and then there's grain, and this, that. Their life is insane. You know what I'm saying? The others, there's a regulation to it. So therefore, that's why it's recommended to live a brahminical lifestyle, not something less, because the other lifestyles are driving you nuts. Is that make sense? Yeah. Okay. The boundary region between land and the water of a river is known as a tata, or shore. This tata may be considered to be both land and water. In other words, it is situated in both. The divine Aishi Shakti, which is situated in the border region, upholds the properties of both land and water, as it were, in one existential entity. The jiva's nature is spiritual, but still his composition is such that he can become controlled by Jada Dharma. The inert nature. Therefore, the Bodha Jiva, conditioned soul, is not beyond all connection with matter. Right? In other words, he's identifying with it, mm-hmm. So he's enjoying and suffering because of it. Mm-hmm. Technically, as a jiva, he's liberated, he's beyond. But because by consciousness he's identifying with it, he enjoys and suffers, you know, due to the temporary nature. Unlike the jivas in the spiritual domain, nonetheless, he is distinct from dull matter because of his animate spiritual nature. Because nothing is animate unless there's a jiva there in the material manifestation. Right? Mm-hmm. Since the jiva is by nature different from both the purely spiritual entities and dull matter, he is classified as a separate principle. Therefore, the eternal distinction between Bhagavan and the jiva must be accepted. Right? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So there's more of a difference made with us than there is with the internal potency. That's why we assist the internal potency, because we're more close to the internal potency. You know what I'm saying?
And the same principle goes that what you associate with, you eventually become.
Yes. So that's why people become dull. From this analysis, we can conclude, you understand? So we're eternally servant of Krishna, but we're eternally servant as servant of the internal potency. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't make so much distinction between the Lord and his internal potency. But the jiva we make more because of his ability to connect with matter, because the Lord doesn't interact with his matter. Right? Does that make sense? So we're always assistants too. So if we can use the matter in Krishna's service, then we'll be allowed to assist in using the internal potency in the Lord's service. Like that. Because our point is we want to enjoy energy. We're not distinguishing. Because if we were distinguishing, why would we be okay with this? It's, no, I want that one. Mm-hmm. No, but we're quite happy with this. So we're not distinguishing. So the point is for us, it's just energy. It doesn't matter. As long as the energy is able to be enjoyed, that's what we want. So that energy that can be enjoyed, that's external. The energy that can't be enjoyed by us is the internal. Because it's only enjoyed by Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? From this analysis, we can conclude that the jiva is the beta-beta prakasha manifestation of Bhagavan, simultaneously one with and different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Still, since the jiva may be subject to the dominion of Maya, while the Supreme Lord is eternally the controller of Maya, the concept of eternal difference between the jiva and the Lord may be seen to predominate. Yeah, because we can be influenced, and so he's not. So there are the infallible, but he's the supreme infallible. The internal potency is also infallible, but still he's the source of the internal potency. You know what I'm saying? You use general terms, but then within that general term there are specifics. Right? So there is Brahman, but then there's supreme Brahman. Right, we can refer to Krishna as Brahman, because then that means as opposed to external energy or material. So he's Brahman, that means he's transcendental. But within Brahman, he's supreme Brahman. Right, so you have inferior Brahman, you have minuscule Brahman, you have, you know, Brahman, and then you have supreme Brahman. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the point, is whatever you're discussing, you have to see what's the context, and then apply it there. So that's why in logic, which we'll get into in the six systems, is that one of the fallacies is you're using the wrong context for the word or example, right? So that's wrong, is that you're taking it out of context. So I try to apply, because it's the same word, I try to apply a different situation. Then that means you have to use a different word. Still, okay, simultaneous one and different. Since the jiva may be subject to the domination of Maya, while the Supreme Lord is eternally the controller of Maya, the concept of eternal difference between the jiva and Lord may be seen to predominate, right? So that's what we're looking at when we're here, is that predominance of the difference, right? Does that make sense? So that also, you know, brings out mudras, that difference. And that makes, because when you're dealing with the Lord and the jiva in the conditioned state, then that difference you have to be able to bring out, that he is not God, he is separate from God, but he's also separate from the material energy. So that difference is what you're trying to create. Once you appreciate the difference, then you can start to see what's the same. But at the same time, it's when we're using the soft approach, then you'll bring out the commonality. Right? In other words, if you're using the logical approach, then you're going sambandha abhideya prayojana. If you're using it means that's the intellectual approach. If you're using the approach of the mind, you're going sambandha prayojana abhideya. Right? You're always, that's the difference. Soft means you're always showing what's the result before you actually get into the practice. Right? So as soon as you touch on that immediately. While the logical, you put everything in place, everything in line, then you apply it, then you get the results. While the others, you don't deal putting everything in place. You first, you know, show you and then the goal. When that's connected, then you can talk about the subject and actually, you know, proper, you know, what's the activity and all that. Because no one wants to hear about what's the reality of things and what I should be doing until I can see it's worth, I'm going to get benefit from seeing it in that way. You understand? So the hard is you're pointing out everything, who we are, what is everything, and when that's all understood, all four aspects of the sambandha, then we get into applying it. You understand? But in the soft, you're basically showing there's you and then there's this goal. You have a connection there. So you're going prajumna adiruddha. Right? And you're leaving out sankarshan, because that's where what we'd call the hard aspect, because that doesn't have rasa. That's the supreme truth being explained without the aspect of rasa. So that's why it's hard. But prajumna adiruddha, that's soft, because that's something I want. So it's not a matter of changing the preaching, it's a matter of this is what makes a difference. So if we've accepted the principle, then the hard is not hard, because it's just facts. But if we haven't accepted, then you'll see those who like the logical and those who can't don't like the logical. So you use whichever one works. You know, in other words, the logic of the intelligence or the logic of the mind. It's both logical, but it's just a matter of which one. But if it doesn't follow those two, it's not logical. So it's not soft. It's mushy.
Gooey.
Gooey, yeah. Gooey peachy. Okay. Servitorship. So close. Oh, well. Tomorrow. Somehow the jiva is always a problem.
Yeah,
it's always an issue. At least we're not having to worry about where it came from. By the way.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki,
Jai
Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Nitya Gaura Prabhupāda ki.